Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection. My guest this morning is Jeff Rollinson with the Nebraska Game and Parks Commission. Good morning, sir. How you doing?
By God, Rick, I'm doing good. How you doing?
I should mention to folks, you know, now world traveler and hunter, Jeff Rollinson.
Yeah, I was going to say, the cost for this interview just went up.
Let's talk about that a little bit since I mentioned it. You just had a chance and got home from Argentina hunting doves.
I did. I tell you, you know, it's been a bucket list trip of mine for a lot of years. And my father-in-law and brother-in-law and I and another friend, we finally put it together this year. And actually got a, you know, bought it at a DU banquet. Well, part of it, I guess. At a DU banquet, and decided this was going to be the year we do it. And oh, my gosh. I mean to tell you, we saw some incredible dove hunting. There's no question about that.
How are the accommodations with all that?
Oh, my gosh. It was just wonderful. Neat lodge. Neat guy. We called him G, and his name was, I think, like Yardo or Guiardo, if something like that. But, of course, he'd lived there all his life, and he built this lodge, and it wasn't anything monstrous, but it was really well done, all ranch-style type lodge. Yeah, and big fire pit out front. That's for you and me, Rick, because I know you and I are big fire pit fans.
Oh, yeah.
Huge fire pit out front. It could seat about 15, 20 people pretty easily. And you know, it was just food. I mean, I tell you, if this was truly a taste of Argentina, then I got the bug there. But it was delicious. Yeah, and I think I gained 10 pounds on this trip. They just keep throwing food at you everywhere you turn. But it was wonderful. Wonderful accommodations, wonderful rooms at the lodge to stay in, and got to meet. We call them the gauchos, but they were a lot of the local gentlemen that there were guides in the dove fields and neat guys and whatnot, and got to learn a little bit about them and the culture there and their background, which I found real intriguing. It was just a neat experience.
Very good. Now, doves, you know, you and I think like biologists, what type of field are you hunting over? What's bringing the dove in?
Well, it's pretty, you know, pretty similar to here. In fact, you know, the landscape where we were at, which is outside of Cordova, Argentina, was you know, really looked like, it kind of looked like, you know, central Nebraska and west Texas, you know, kind of a mixture there, you know.
Okay.
And so it was kind of a lot of, you know, mesquite type scrub brush. Everything there's got a thorn or a sticker on it. You can't hardly walk through.
Now that's Texas, yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. That's the Texas part of the marriage there. See? And but rolling hills and whatnot in Nebraska and neat country. But mostly you're hunting around the edges of cornfields, and doves are flying over those cornfields just about all day long. And you know, I believe they have about 60 million doves, and so. You know, you're in places where if they're really hot and heavy, you're seeing doves just flying constantly all day long.
Wow.
And so it was just a lot of fun to see that much action. It's the eared dove. The eared dove is a relative close connection to the mourning dove that is really common and popular here in the United States. And I tell you right now, in first flight, you won't know the difference. They look just about the same.
Excellent. Well, I'm happy for you, man. That's
kind
of a bucket list item.
Great campfires at night, great food, great friends and camaraderie, and you know, certainly a whole lot of hunting in the field. So we just when we got the longest part, you know, Argentina is not overly easy to get to, and so it's quite a bit of airport and plane time. But we just came back just as happy as could be. How much fun that was.
Another question I was going to ask you related to that, and it's due more to the travel and the airplanes and all like that. Did you take your own shotguns or just use what they had on hand down there?
We used what they had down there. When you price it out, it probably costs a little bit, about the same, actually, maybe a little more, but you're not, they're having some problems with losing luggage and that kind of thing at times. They did lose our luggage coming to the flight, so I show up in Argentina in the middle of their winter. And a pair of shorts and a fishing shirt. And I hunted for 2 days in a pair of shorts. No, we're not talking winter. It's 40 degrees, but I'll tell you right now, 40 degrees is chilly in a pair of shorts and a thin fishing shirt. So, you do what you got to do, right? So I was glad we didn't bring our own guns, because if I'd have lost those guns, we'd have not been real happy.
It's become such a hassle to transport your own firearms. If I can't drive to it, or charter a plane, I'd use whatever guns the outfitter has available. Spend some time getting sighted in with them, but that's
If I lose a couple pair of camouflage pants and a jacket, I'm probably not going to be too down about that. But if I lost, a shotgun or two, that'd probably ruin my trip.
Yes, it would in a hurry.
That's not going to be as fun. So, no, it worked out just fine. It worked out really good. And, of course, you buy the ammo down there because it doesn't pay to ship the ammo. And so you buy it down there as well from the lodge. And so and you'll go through a lot of ammo down there. I mean, you're talking cases of ammo. So
that is the other thing that the South American dove hunting is known for, is you are shooting all the time. And I know when you first told me you had gotten back from that, that was one of my first questions, is how many shells did you shoot up?
I was that Husker selective kind of, kid out there. I was, when I'm hunting, I'm really selective on my shots and blah, blah, blah. And so 2.5 days of hunting, and I went through probably 61 boxes of shells.
61 boxes, 25 rounds a box. That's 1,500 and something rounds of ammunition.
Yeah, I went through a lot of ammunition, but there were guys that did that in a day. There were some guys that did that in a day, so they were just constantly shooting, and I could hear them. They were just constantly shooting. I wasn't constantly shooting, but you could be. There's just doves flying all the time at all different levels of the stratosphere, and so you're really learning how to lead and how to instinctively shoot. And one thing I have to say, the dove harvest for me went up quite well when I quit worrying about lead and lead time and all that, and all I did was mount the shotgun, look out to the front of the dove and shoot, and I dropped those pretty darn consistently. But here in the United States, we say, and I think this is still true, on average it takes about 6 or 7 shells for every dove harvested. And I know I beat that average by quite some bit when I was down there. So it can be done with a little bit of practice.
That's my challenge, is beat that odd. I have been able to get my 15 doves is our limit, and I've been able to get my 15 doves within a box of 12 gauge, within a box of 20 gauge, almost with 410. But I got a new one to work with this year.
Oh,
I got a 28 gauge.
Made for dove hunting. That is one of my favorites on doves.
I have never had a 28, and my friend Larry Golden out here, he called me here a few months back and had a special deal he could get for 28 gauges if he bought two. So he made one more call, and two 28 gauges arrived in Nebraska, and we're ready to go.
Oh, yeah. I was made for dove hunting. And I tell you, and especially in your neck of the woods, Rick, dove hunting in Nebraska is no slouch whatsoever. In fact, there's some areas where we just got incredible dove flights and dove hunting. And I think the North Platte portion of the state is probably just about second to none, I think, in terms of dove hunting. So we've got some incredible opportunities here in Nebraska.
We do have some great spots. And we get, of course, we've got the mourning dove that you mentioned, and we've got the Eurasian collared dove, but every few years we get the white wing in here too.
White wing, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you can, when you guys do a dove slam contest, I'm ready.
I think that's what we're going to have to talk about now.
Now, another thing.
One thing that I heard from one of the guides, and I was so proud of this. I was really, really proud of this. He made the comment that they like it when American hunters come down because we follow the rules. We're really into the rules.
That's good.
And I told him, I said, that's due to our model of conservation, right? We have rule of law, rules in our conservation model, guidelines and rules that we follow, and they're laws, and they're important to hunters and to conservationists alike. And we had a good conversation about North American model. I really enjoyed talking with them. But it was really interesting that they highlighted that, you know, the Americans come down to hunt there, and they're more interested in following rules and making sure they don't violate the rules there in Argentina. I was pretty proud of that.
That is good. That's a good association to have.
Yeah. Well, and I told them, I said, you know, our model, our management belief has been based on the premise of, you know, management for all, for the greatest long-term outcome for the people and the resource. And I said that requires laws, and that requires enforcement of those laws. And I said, so yeah, it makes sense to me. Americans are big on having laws to make sure the resource is available indefinitely and enforcing those laws. So anyway, it was a neat thing to hear. So
good. And our dove season is not that far off. It'll open September 1.
Yes.
I may get out to the first day, but then I'm going to be gone that weekend. I'm flying down to Texas. My dad, the old Marine, will be turning 90, and my sister called, and I'm ordered to be down there for the party.
there's no discussion there.
No discussion. So.
Oh yeah. Well, congratulations. That's a 90 years old. That's awesome.
Now, another season that's open, and actually the first quote fall season, is squirrel, and we have talked about that a lot in the past too.
Oh man. You know, you and I are a couple old squirrel hunters, and, you know, it's interesting because it seems like not as many people are taken to squirrel hunting today as they did, you know, 40, 50 years ago. Yeah, and it's unfortunate because not only is squirrel hunting one of the most fun critters to chase in the woods, they provide tons of opportunity, and they're good table fare. They taste great. And those of us who just love going out with a rimfire, it was just made for rimfire hunting, right? And so it's just
exactly
a fun activity here as we get into September. It's going to be a lot of people that hopefully will start taking back to the woods again. And there are, I know, a lot of people are looking forward to that, especially as we get in October and then, you know, really November. Then, it, you know, get that frost in October, and then it really picks up a little for folks. But, man, what a hoot. I mean, if you've never squirrel hunted, you owe it to yourself. It's one of the easiest hunts, and again, one of the most challenging hunts, all in the same morning. And opportunity for squirrels is just abound. I mean, access for squirrels is a whole different ballgame than access for, say, deer hunting. And so it's just something that people need to really take advantage of and enjoy here in Nebraska.
I was writing about the squirrel season opening and squirrel hunting, and I mentioned in an article that I don't know why it is, but just about every outdoor person I know, when you are surprised by that sound of some animal charging through the leaves, you immediately think bear, but it's some rogue squirrel.
Isn't that funny how that little squirrel can do his best imitation of a grizzly bear? I mean, you can't hardly tell the difference. It's just so funny. They come charging, and you know, every deer hunter up in a deer stand, me myself included, you hear that squirrel, you know, charging through the forest floor, and you're thinking, oh, that's got to be the biggest deer we'll ever see. You turn around, you look, and there's nothing. You look down below, and there's this little bitty, you know, a few pound squirrel staring at you, and you can't believe how much noise they can make.
That's right. Now, you and I hatched an idea when the remake of the movie True Grit came out.
It inspired us.
It inspired us because you and I are both pistoleros. We love hunting with pistols. Yeah. And we decided that we, in honor of the True Grit, said we were going to have our first True Grit squirrel hunt. Well, we got to get it done.
Yeah, I agree.
We've both done it
independently.
Yes.
Probably every year. But we haven't gotten together on it.
Matter of fact, I was just shooting my long barrel single six the other day.
Tuning up
for that.
And honestly, there's all kinds of squirrel guns out there. But when you're talking the True Grit hunt, it really just boils down to the Ruger single six to some degree. And a little bit of ammo, a little box of ammo, and some time in the squirrel woods. And it's amazing. Folks have gone out squirrel hunting maybe as a kid or even as an adult, and they've used shotgun or rifle. You know, and I've turned a few people around to, you go out and try it with a single-action revolver. and they do, or they go out and try it with a semi-auto with a red dot, whatever the case may be, and they come back and tell me that was fun. That was a hoot. And, you know, you and I are, you know, small game, big game hunters when it comes to handguns. But so many people want to get out hunting with a handgun, but they just haven't taken the plunge. Squirrels are the greatest entry point for handgun hunting there is. And get out and try it with a 22 rimfire on squirrels, and then, of course, move up into the, you know, big game category with big game handgun. But the challenge and the excitement won't change. it's a fun hunt.
I am going to call you next week, and we are going to nail down a date when I come back, and we're going to go squirrel hunting.
I'm all for it.
Because you've got the advantage. You have squirrels.
We have a few. We got a good number of squirrels. Yeah.
We have a few out here, but most of them are in town where they're safe. I can't get to them. But we need to do that. We've talked about it, and I always wanted to go, you and I and Dick Turpin. Well, of course, we've lost Dick, and I decided, by God, we're going to do it. I'm not going to lose another opportunity like that.
Well, Dick will be there with us in spirit, no question about that.
Oh, I'm sure he will, and there will be some good Dick Turpin stories.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I was talking with a friend of mine out this way. Do you know Sean Riley?
Oh, do I know Sean Riley?
Okay.
What a good guy.
Good guy.
One of the best.
We were talking about that, and, you know, we realized that there's not many Dick Turpin stories that we can talk about on the air or in writing.
It's funny, he is Nebraska's one and only original outdoor legend.
Yeah,
and he's one of those people that he'd been there, done that, wrote the book and bought the T-shirt, and
designed the T-shirt.
I mean, they're ornery. Oh God, he was the folks who know him or don't know him, he was a consummate outdoor conservationist legend, game warden here in Nebraska, chief of law enforcement, hunter ed coordinator, and just one of the absolute neatest gentlemen you will ever meet.
Yep.
And if you didn't know Dick Turpin, that you needed to, or because he was
you missed something.
he was something else.
Back to squirrel hunting for a second.
Yeah.
What are a couple of your favorite techniques, and do you use a call?
I do. In fact, I got one sitting right here. Now, there's two types of calls. There's calls like you can blow into, and there's calls that you just hit, have a little bulb, a rubber bulb
right
on the end, and you hit it with your hand. And I never did like those, but I figured, you know what, they got to be pushing air into something, so I ripped that bulb off, and you blow into the end the bulb was on, and it'll sound something like this. And it sounds so much more realistic.
That is very good.
Yeah, then pounding on that bulb and hitting it against your leg and causing all kinds of movement. Now, the other thing is if you have a closed reed rabbit call and just a small wooden closed reed rabbit call you're blowing to for coyotes and whatnot, you can do the same thing. And what you're doing is you're going tuk 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 tuk. And when I say tuk tuk for the barks, I'm opening up my hand on the call to get it louder.
Right.
And then when I go down for those lower barks, and I close my hand on the call, and
that is pretty good. I'm gonna have to try that. I have never used a call, an aid. I've always done it with my mouth. Just make my own sound.
I like it.
I didn't need to learn to use a call, but I'm gonna have to try that.
You know, it's kind of in those areas where sometimes it just calms them down. Sometimes it gets them riled up. If I really get barking and chattering, they think maybe a predator or something has entered the area, so a lot of them come out onto the branch to bark back and warn the others of a predator. And so that can work real well. The other thing that I've been one of my go-to calls is just again going back to using a predator call. If nothing else works at the end of the morning or whatnot or mid morning, is I'll just get on that start way on
with the rabbit call,
and a rabbit call, and a lot of times a squirrel will come running across the woods, across the treetops to come look and see what's going on. You know, who's getting eaten, what kind of predators in the area. You know, they're real in tune to predators moving into the woods and they like to sound off the warning. And so I've had squirrels just come running across the treetops right toward me to get a better picture of what's going on, what's causing the commotion. It might just be curiosity, but, you know, anytime a cat, I've been out hunting and seeing a feral cat or fox enter the squirrel woods, they all start chattering and barking at them. So, you know, I think it has more to do with wanting to make sure they ward off that predator. So that can work really well, too. The only problem is once you get really wailing on a rabbit call and cause all that kind of commotion, it kind of slows things down afterwards for a little bit, too.
Or you get overrun by a coyote once.
Yeah, darn it, you call a coyote in.
Are you a fan of just sitting and waiting, or do you stalk them? How do you do that?
I'm a sitter and waiter. I like to just walk into the squirrel woods, usually up on a ridge, overlooking a drainage or something that's got a lot of oak trees, and I just sit down on that little ridge and pull out the pistol, and I've got a shooting stick that I use to kind of rest the pistol on. It's also my walking stick. And I just sit there, and sometimes I'll call. Sometimes if the squirrels are out moving around, I won't even make a sound. I'll just sit there. And as they get a couple of them closer here, take a shot and drop a squirrel, and then just kind of wait and let it calm down. And then I go pick up my squirrels at the end of the morning and walk out of the woods a happy camper.
Have you ever done the two-person leapfrogging type thing, stalking through the woods?
You know, back years ago I did with my cousins that I hunted with, and that can be really productive.
It is.
I've also used that where you throw a blaze orange jacket on one side of the trees, and then you come to the other side and sit down. And so when they come out, sometimes they look at that jacket and they move around toward your side, and you're all camouflaged up, you know, and then you take them that way. But the leapfrogging you're talking about, you need to explain that to people. That's a good one.
Yeah, I have two hunters, and usually we'll be 10 to 15 yards apart. And one hunter will move, advance forward 20, 25 yards. The other one's staying still. And the squirrels will follow the moving hunter. And like you said, they like to stay out of sight. And as they move, they'll go around the tree to stay out of sight of the moving hunter. And a lot of times present a shot to the stationary hunter. And I've taken a lot of squirrels that way.
Yeah. No, that's a good one. That's a good one. Because squirrels, you know, when they come out, a lot of times they're in their den, or sometimes they're up in a nest, sometimes they're denning, sometimes they're just on the, you know, up on a crevice, up on a high branch somewhere, and they hear commotion, and they like to look down and look for that commotion, and if they see movement, a lot of times they want to move away and go on the other side of the tree, and that's where that can work really well.
Very good. Now, you got your squirrels, you got them home. You've used the famous Dick Turpin way of skinning them. What are some of your better recipes?
Oh, man, I tell you, you know, there's a lot of recipes, and there's a lot of ways to do squirrel. You know, and one of my favorites is simply just taking, you know, a can of, you know, a cream of mushroom soup and some rice, and then you can quarter out the squirrel, leave the meat on the bone, and put it in that mushroom soup and the rice and in a casserole dish, and then, you know, bake it in the oven. And you, when it comes out, it, you're just going to spoon out a quarter, a hind quarter, or a front quarter with the rice and the mushroom, you know, mushroom sauce and seasoning if you like, and then you're just going to eat it right off the bone, and then you've got the rice and the mushroom sauce, so it's really good that way. That's a really good one. You know, squirrels, like any other type of red meat, you know, you can smoke them. And there's a different flavor for squirrels. Some people don't care for it as much smoke. Some people, with a good seasoning and smoking, just think it's awesome. And so that works well. At the end of the season, if you harvested a bunch of squirrels, you can make squirrel jerky, which is not very different. In fact, I'll use a packet of seasoning that I use just for, you know, same as deer. So, you know, teriyaki squirrel seasoning or teriyaki jerky. And you can put them on the grill or on the smoker with teriyaki sauce. And they're just delicious that way, too. There's just a lot of ways.
Yep. A lot of time I'll just debone them, cut them up in little chunks, season it, fry it up, and then make, like, biscuits and gravy with it.
Oh, yeah, I bet that's delicious.
Yep. So
that's a great way to do it. You know, our very own Stan Krause, he's one of the squirrel masters here. He's a good friend of Dick Turpin's, and he and Dick, they'd hunted squirrels together for probably 60 years, and he just probably forgot more about squirrels than most of us will ever know. Yeah, and he makes a squirrel soup, and I'm going to tell you, Rick, it is just awesome.
Well, let's get him in camp.
Yeah, oh, he'd go with us in a heartbeat. He's a squirrel hunter. He's out here at the Outdoor Ed Center here in Lincoln probably twice a week, sighting in and practicing shooting. And just about, you know, 3 or 4 days a week during the season, I think he's out chasing squirrels.
I hear music in the background, and that means we're out of time again.
Always too little time.
Too time, yeah. Thanks again, partner, for being on the show, and congratulations on your world travels and Argentinian hunt.
And, I appreciate it, and I look forward to our True Grit squirrel hunt.
I will be calling you next week, and we're going to nail that one down.
Sounds like a plan.
That's it for this week, folks. We'll see you next time on another edition of the Outdoor Connection.